Get settled in your chairs and ready for the meeting. It is the witching hour. Okay, good afternoon. Welcome to the first meeting of the Faculty Senate for 2014. Jane, if you're ready, could you please call the roll?
Abramovich. Abramovich. Albertson.
This is Julie Cassio. I'm calling in for Leif.
Thank you. Baker. Tori Baker.
Present.
Okay. Barnes.
Here.
Berge.
Yep.
Bret Hart. Is anyone here for Donny Bret Hart? Vincent C. Anyone here for Vincent C? Chen. Kaufman.
Present.
Condi. Anyone here for Mark Condi? Cook.
Here.
Davis.
Here.
Dean.
Here.
Duke. Rob Duke.
Here.
Fallon. Anyone here for Chris Fallon? Focesato. Gibson.
Here.
Gustafson.
Yeah.
Hahn. Anyone here for Kelsey Hahn? Hardy.
Yeah.
Healy. Horseman. Yeah. Johnson.
Here. Yeah.
Johnston.
Here.
Yeah. Jolly. Keelan. Larden.
Yes.
Lovecraft. Anyone here for Amy Lovecraft? McCartney.
Liz Hummerkaus here for Leslie McCartney.
Hi. Meyer.
Here.
Misra. Moser.
I'm also here for Senate.
You're okay.
Wait a minute.
Newberry.
Here.
I heard you, but I don't see you.
I see him. On the other side of the bag.
Oh. Radenbaugh. Todd Radenbaugh. Shellcross.
She's traveling.
Short.
Here.
Valentine.
Here.
Weber.
Here.
Webley.
Here.
Winfrey.
Here.
Windsor. Anyone here for Peter Windsor? Yari.
Here.
Zhang. Thank you. And acknowledge Falk Whitman is here as our United Academics representative. Registrar Libby Eddy is here. Do we have anyone from staff council?
Hi, Jane. This is Brad. I'm online.
Thank you, Brad. Anyone from ASUAF today? Athletics? Danny Shepherd is here. Dean Herman is traveling. I see Dean Eric Madsen is here. Provost Hendricks is here. I don't see our chancellor yet, but he's coming, right? He's on his way. Alex Fitz is here, our vice provost. And hope I haven't overlooked anyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Unfortunately, I've got a before we get there, nice lead-in. I've checked over the minutes from December, and I didn't find anything. Does anyone have any corrections for the minutes for the December Faculty Senate meeting? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. Has everyone had a chance to look at the agenda? And are there any changes you wish to make to the agenda for today? Okay, seeing none, we have an agenda. You may recall that last December we passed a motion amending the English placement policy. The Chancellor has signed that motion, and that leaves no motions pending. And we move now to my remarks, which are unfortunately rather lengthy, so bear with me. First of all, the Faculty Senate elections are upon us. Memos have gone out to all of the schools and colleges requesting that the deans run the elections, and so hopefully you have received notice of Faculty Senate elections within your unit. If not, please go bug your dean. I've gotten mine, so that's my gauge. Also, please make sure that you beat the bushes, encourage your colleagues to consider running for Faculty Senate. It's a great way to learn a great deal about what's going on across the university and have some influence, particularly in the committees, over things of importance. Related to that, Wayne Marr has resigned from the School of Management, which means that he is no longer a senator either. Because neither of the School of Management alternates were available to serve out his term, the School of Management held a special election, and as a result, we get to welcome back Dr. Ken Abramovich to the Faculty Senate. He's been here, I don't know how many years, Ken, but quite a long time, so we're happy to have you back. Thanks for being willing to serve. Nominations will be opening up at the March meeting for the next president-elect of the Faculty Senate, and folks that are thinking about taking a greater leadership role within the Faculty Senate, I encourage you to nominate yourself, or if you see someone who's been who you think would be a good leader, encourage them to nominate themselves, or come to us and we'll help you twist their arms. When I say we, I mean primarily Cecile and myself. It is a great way to become involved both within UAF in terms of shared governance with the administration, but also in learning a great deal more and having some influence on how the three universities, particularly the faculty of the three universities, are interacting on issues of common concern. So it is a great experience. It does take time, but it is a great experience. I recommend it if you can manage it. On a similar note, we need nominations for Outstanding Senator of the Year. Every year, the Faculty Senate awards one of its senators, cannot be president or president-elect, awards one of its senators an award for service above and beyond the usual, and we want to recognize that publicly. It does have some benefits to it, like airline mileage, so please... if you know of someone who has provided some extra good service to the Faculty Senate, please let us know. President-elect Cecile Lardon will be chairing the committee that will pour through the applications and come up with a recommendation. Yeah, we need nominations, and then you will choose. The Chancellor, when he comes, will talk in some detail about the new budget realities that we at the University of Alaska, the system, as well as the UAF in particular, face in the wake of the Governor's proposed budget. we already knew that we were going into some lean years as a result of unlikely increases in revenue to the universities from the legislature. We now know that the budget, the governor has requested a substantially smaller budget going forward next year. Of course, we don't know until the legislature is done what that will be. As a result, the UAF administration has has put together essentially a plan for how the university will try to prepare for and deal with that potential reality that's upon us. One of the moves that the administration has made is to appoint a so-called budget options group, or BOG, that is charged with developing and essentially doing some initial investigation of potential ways that UAF can save money going forward, with a target of about $11 million to try to identify that level of savings. This is not a small deal. This is a big deal. The chancellor asked President-elect Cecile Lardin and myself to serve on this group. And if you have ideas, if you have concerns that you want to bring forward to the group, we are the vehicle through which you can do that. So I invite your comments and suggestions for the budget options group to consider. We are probably a little bit over halfway done, but every meeting involves asking all committee members for any new ideas. So it's not too late, but please get them to us quickly if you have any.
David, on that topic, I have a couple of documents from, I don't know if this turned on, I have a couple of documents from the legislature dealing with budget issues. So if the chancellor is going to be talking about this, if it's okay, I'll distribute those right now.
You certainly may distribute them, and then there'll be an opportunity for you to comment later on those. The next step after the budget options group has identified potential savings, the provost is assembling, as she does every year, a planning and budget committee that will be charged with coming up with recommendations that will go forward to the chancellor's cabinet on how to prioritize and recommend changes in the budget. In years past, that often has been an opportunity for proposals for additional money, additional support for various worthy projects or proposals. This year, the Planning and Budget Committee will be starting a little bit earlier, and maybe the provost is going to be talking more about that. But its charge will be a little bit less fun. That is, trying to prioritize and make recommendations concerning ways to save money for UAF. Generally speaking, the Planning and Budget Committee is represented by the President and President-elect of the Faculty Senate. I have no great love for doing that. I'm willing to do that, and I think Cecile is as well. However, if anyone here has a keen interest and some expertise on this, I would welcome you to put your name forward, since it does not have to be the president and president-elect. you may be somewhat familiar. I'm going to report a little bit on the General Education Learning Outcomes Committee. You may be familiar with the fact that the Board of Regents and the president have long been seeking greater alignment among the three universities comprising the University of Alaska system. In a recent retreat, there was generated some proposals, I guess I would say, that to essentially ask the three faculty senates through the Faculty Alliance to come up with an alignment, essentially a common set of GERs in math and English. Okay, so that would be common course numberings, common placement, common entry levels, and so forth. So that has come to the Faculty Alliance. The Faculty Alliance will be considering how we want to go about doing that. Eventually, whatever we come up with, of course, will be coming to the Senate, but I wanted to give you a heads up on that. the General Education Learning Outcomes Group, which is a subcommittee of the Faculty Alliance, had a day-long meeting in Anchorage last weekend, so not this past weekend, but the weekend before. The initial objective was to come up and finalize the learning outcomes that that committee had been working on. Instead, based on this new bit of information, the learning outcomes group attempted to start rethinking what part of the learning outcomes would be still considered part of general education and what parts might be achieved some other way, so that when it comes to pass that we're asked to align GERs more completely, it's potentially doable. Just a follow-up from, you'll note under President's remarks it has there is an attachment. This is a follow-up to the support that we gave to the Department of Mathematics and Statistics last May to retain its PhD program in mathematics. The support for that was depended on a annual report submitted to the Faculty Senate updating us with respect to progress towards revitalizing their PhD in mathematics. The Faculty Senate Administrative Committee has reviewed the report and responded positively to the Department of Mathematics and Statistics concerning their program. That memo was attached. We also recommended that or asked that the department provide an update in late spring when they have a firm number of students who have committed to matriculation in the program. The final item on my list, and I apologize for how long this is taking, but you may recall that in December, the provost asked the Faculty Senate to provide input on a draft strategic plan for UAF. That the last draft was done by the by a strategic planning committee that was dated July of 2012. The hope was to delay completing the strategic plan so that pending the outcome of the strategic directions initiative, which is now Shaping Alaska's Future, which was an initiative taken on by statewide. That is just about to be finished, but we are in need of a strategic plan that can be used for accreditation purposes this year. So the provost asked the Faculty Senate to provide some input on the strategic plan draft that was available as a discussion item on through our website. Some of you did respond, and I thank you. And in addition, we reviewed it, and we have provided or are providing a memo to the provost summarizing our feedback, which is essentially this, that the current draft reads like a series of noble aspirations and goals, but not a lot like a strategic plan in the sense that there's not really a series of action items in there that can be acted on. And so the provost is receiving that, and we're asking that an update be provided to the Faculty Senate for a resolution of support in the March meeting. So that is the status of that. And with that, I'm going to stop talking and open it up for, are there any questions concerning my comments? Yes, Deb.
I don't have a question. This specific plan I have shared it with all the faculty in the college.
I have shared it with all the faculty. I didn't get any feedback. Okay. Why can't the provost have a task force organized to look at it from a different perspective, maybe five faculty members or so who are knowledgeable about it and can come up with some action items? After that, we can discuss something more. It's a suggestion. I'm not saying that has to be done. That will help because letting it to so many faculty members, probably, people are not, they don't know what the background is and discussion is, and so I don't know really what to say. So,
Do you want to address that now, or do you want to address that maybe in your remarks? Or?
Well, I could briefly address it now for continuity. I plan to work with the original planning committee in terms of drafting revisions. So there will be faculty input at that stage, and they're, of course, most knowledgeable about the product.
Okay. Thank you, Provost Hendricks. Any other questions? Okay. President-elect Cecile Lardon.
Okay, just a couple of short things. One is... One is one item from the Statewide Academic Council. You probably all remember, well, not all of you, but most of you will remember that we've been talking about the potential replacement of our learning management system, which currently is Blackboard, for a couple of years now. And David sort of spearheaded an early pilot project with e-learning. We kind of looked at multiple different products. Well, this is, you know, come up again. We're still being discussed, and one of the goals is to make sure that we have the same LMS for all three universities in the UA system so that students basically have the same experience when they enter that course management system. Kind of with the thought in mind that students take classes at potentially more than one of our universities. So, you know, different people have been thinking about this. Carl Kowalski, who is the head of OIT, would really like to move forward with this a little bit faster than we have. And, of course, the question is always whether the various faculty senates can move at lightning speed or at least maybe a little bit faster than we often do. But there's also sort of the thought of that maybe there needs to be some guiding policy to help make a decision about which products to choose. So the leadership of each of the universities have been tasked with kind of providing some guiding policy for choosing an LMS that will carry us into the future. And at the same time, the Senates and other groups, you know, we don't have a subcommittee right now, but probably we'll need one. So the subcommittees of the Senate can start working more seriously on looking at the specific product and start making some recommendations about what products might be a good choice, not only in terms of continuity of what we've had, but also with the goal of more flexibility, technological flexibility going into the next decade, and with sort of the, hopefully the incentive of bringing faculty in on this technology, people who have not been used to using this in the past, people who haven't used Blackboard, or who have sort of ventured into other venues to avoid Blackboard, you know, maybe we can bring those back in to use the same system. So again, we'll most likely establish a committee to work on this, but so that'll be an ongoing discussion. Hopefully, we'll move a little bit faster on that. The other quick item is really just informational, and that is that David and I have been talking more with folks at e-learning, and as you know, e-learning is not just for distance education anymore. They really, their task has become much broader to work with and dialogue with faculty about innovation in teaching. And they're very interested in collaborating more with the Senate on various projects. So they'll hopefully make a presentation at the administrative committee the next time it meets, and then you know, we'll have some better ideas of how we can collaborate with folks over there. But in the meantime, if you have some ideas, definitely let me know. That's all I have.
Questions for Cecile, Jane?
Jill, who has asked for the same, us to get the same LMS across the three U's?
That's coming from statewide.
Thank you.
At the risk of opening up a can of worms, I should mention that there is a new statewide group that has formed that is acting to help move some of these ideas forward, and we'll be interacting with them. And that's called the Summit Team, which is the president, the vice president for academic affairs, Danis Thomas, and the three chancellors and the three provosts. Have I got that right? Okay. And so that is the immediate source of some of these things that are essentially being promulgated at the statewide level. So I'm going to move now to, since the chancellor's not here, we'll hold off on his comments and invite Provost Henrich's comments.
It's always a little bit of a chancy situation when I speak for the chancellor because he may reiterate some of my remarks, and so I apologize if there ends up being any repetition. I'll expand a little bit on David's comments about the summit team. This was a group that was formed by the president, and it was formed in response to a very strong message from the Board of Regents that the universities needed to collaborate more and collaborate more effectively. The reason that the Regents is pushing this very hard is that first they see it as a path to reducing costs, but perhaps more importantly it's a factor that plays no matter what our budget situation is that they believe that this is a path to serving students better. The summit team is trying very hard to focus on that particular aspect to identify the changes that will satisfy the regents that we are working hard to collaborate effectively, but especially those that may have a positive impact in terms of the student experience. So many of the recommendations that are coming forward from the summit team will have that flavor. Now, of course, not everyone will agree that these are the right changes to make or that this is the right time to make them, we believe that it's important to show the Regents that we are serious about improving the student experience and working together. They had some idea that perhaps they should take action to force that a little bit more than what we agree is desirable. So we are doing our best to satisfy what their core desires are in that area. The Shaping Alaska's Future initiative is related to that in some ways. Some aspects of the revised document emphasize various types of collaboration, and that document is going to be finalized over the next month or so. The Alliance is coordinating input from the faculties. For those of you who saw the document that was first prepared in October, it's improved greatly. It's far more focused, far more reasonable. I think something that most faculty can agree will constitute some positive steps forward for the university system. It has had input from a wide variety of different groups, including the faculty, of course, including all of the many people that attended the listening sessions, including the coalition of student leaders, including various university administrative groups, and so on. As such, of course, it contains elements that please one group but not another. Every such document contains some compromises in order to attempt to meet the highest needs and priorities of the different constituent groups. But I think that most people will be pleased with the result. Certainly, the Board of Regents expressed that they were very pleased with the result at their January retreat meeting. The Planning and Budget Committee that David mentioned, of course, it meets every year. This year it's going to have a different charge. As he mentioned, our first charge will be in ranking or prioritizing the suggestions from the Budget Options Group in terms of ways that the university can reduce expenditures or increase revenues, because obviously if we can increase revenues, that's the most desirable outcome of this increasingly challenging budget climate. And it will also help to satisfy legislative priorities, because the legislature is very much interested in seeing the university increase its revenue in order, obviously, so that the legislature will not need to provide so much funding. much easier said than done. I don't mean to be flip about this, but that is going to be an additional focus of the Planning and Budget Committee, is a focus of the Budget Options Group, and will be something that the Chancellor's Cabinet will be considering very seriously as we move forward. I do encourage people who have an intense interest in the budget and in the nitty-gritty of the budget to participate actively, perhaps volunteer to be a member of the Planning and Budget Committee, or otherwise simply provide your input either to the Budget Options Group, or there will still be opportunities for input as the Planning and Budget Committee moves forward with its work. There will be some opportunities to make requests for new funding this year, even though it's a stringent budget environment. Chancellor and I both feel very strongly that we don't want the university to stagnate. We want there to still be opportunities to do new things in this budget environment. Those are obviously going to be more limited than they have been in the recent past, but we don't want to rule them out altogether. One final thing that I'll mention is that some of you may notice that positions are not, faculty positions in particular, are not necessarily being approved for immediate refilling. That is due to some actions in my office where some of the positions that have come forward I have not yet approved. That doesn't necessarily mean that they will never, ever be approved. But there are a couple of things that I need to consider. One is that a lot of the actions that we will be taking in terms of revenue increases or budget cuts won't be effective immediately. And that means that we have to take some steps in FY15 or before FY15 to make ends meet, basically to make sure that income and outgo are reasonably balanced, or exactly balanced, actually, or we'll be in trouble. I'm holding those positions that could be reconsidered later as our budget situation becomes clear, or it could be reconsidered later as other cuts are made that free up funds that may go to those positions. Or it may even be reconsidered sooner if among the group of positions that I have in hand, one in particular stands out as being a higher priority. I have already approved some positions, and I will continue to do that as higher priority positions come forward or emerge from the group as being ones that need to be refilled immediately. So I'll stop there, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I think a general question, and that's the composition of this budget committee. Are they also addressing the possible cuts to the university budget and how we're going to deal with that? I know the Senate is looking at a $15 million cut to the budget, and the House is, according to our lobbyist down there, he said that they're talking about even greater cuts to our budget. So that's for next year. So that's sort of on the table, I know. I just got back from meeting with the Finance Committee while I was down there, but so I'm just curious: is this committee that we're talking about going to be looking at those contingency plans and what might happen?
Well, certainly the Planning and Budget Committee will be given as much information as we have on what's pending before the legislature in terms of potential cuts. They need to know the environment, in which they're making the recommendations that they will. The Budget Options Group is more of an idea group, so they're not working toward any particular financial target exactly. They're basically looking for all possible good ideas. And I'm absolutely sure that the Chancellor's Cabinet is going to be paying really close attention to what the likely outcome of the legislative process will be and how that will impact our FY15 budget situation. Does that address your question?
I think so. Saying that they're not really going to be looking at that, but it's another committee that will be addressing that. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the Budget Options Group, I think, is not looking so specifically at that, but the Planning and Budget Committee and the Chancellor's Cabinet will definitely be looking at what's happening in the legislature.
So it's essentially a three-step process. Right now, the Budget Options Group is working on ideas. those will be forwarded to the Planning and Budget Committee, which will consider those along with a bunch of other things with respect to coming up with a series of recommendations and prioritizations. Those will be passed on, and those will be focused, as the Provost mentioned, in part on how to prioritize ways to save. What's the recommended ranking of ways to save money? Those recommendations go forward to the Chancellor's Cabinet, who work from there to come up with the final decisions about that.
David, this is Tori Baker. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, David. Yes, could you, I'm sorry, again review who is the membership of the options group?
The budget options group consists of a group of people that were appointed, a group was appointed by the Chancellor. And from the Faculty Senate, he asked Cecile and me, the President-elect and President, to serve on the budget options group.
Thanks.
Mostly a variety of, the Vice Chancellor for Administrative Services, Pat Pitney. Oh, my goodness. I'm on the spot here.
Dan White.
There are eight people.
Yeah. So it's largely administrative leaders from various parts of the campus that were asked to serve on this.
And this is sort of a minor point, but the group also considers where we can increase revenue. So it's not just, I mean, there are relatively fewer opportunities for raising revenue, but that is one of the things that that we're working on. It's a very thoughtful group of people, I might say. I've been really pleased with the process. We've all agreed that there are some things that are really central to the functioning of a university that need to be protected. And so as we develop ideas, we always check those back to those central functions, and that will play a role in sort of how we construct our final lists in the end. It's also a group that is very willing to think about unintended consequences of any one of the ideas that are put on the table. So on the one hand, it's very open. Everybody can contribute anything that comes to mind. No ideas are just shut down. But like I said, it's also a very thoughtful group in the sense of thinking about what could be an unintended consequence of any one of the ideas that are brought forth.
And I apologize for not being able to rattle off the names of the committee members. I can think of them slowly as I sit here, but I'd rather not take up Faculty Senate time with that. But I believe the list of committee members is available somewhere. I can make sure that they are. Any other questions for the provost?
There's one over there.
Okay. Laura?
Yeah, I may have missed it. I apologize. But the priority for which faculty positions are getting replaced and which ones are not, who's making that decision and how is it made?
Well, right now I'm making a decision, although it's not a permanent decision. My only decision is to delay my approval of a particular faculty position. I'm doing that, though, with the advice of the dean. I am taking their input about which positions they consider most crucial for their school or college to refill. So it's a combined administrative decision. Now, once the process involving the Budget Options Committee, the Planning and Budget Committee, and the Chancellor's Cabinet, in terms of the cuts and the priorities and revenue options, once that process is complete, it will be a lot clearer what the priorities are for refilling faculty positions. At that point, I will go back to the deans, and we will have a more systematic process for deciding which ones will be opened up in light of the priorities that have been established by the process.
I saw a hand over here. Go ahead.
I just had a clarification that I wanted to ask of the provost. On the Planning and Budget Committee, this is a committee appointed by yourself, is that correct?
It's a committee that I appoint, but there are required membership elements. They were established long ago under Provost Paul Reichert.
Okay.
So, for example, there are a total of five faculty representatives to this committee. There are two specifically chosen by the Faculty Senate, and then three that I formally appoint, but I do so with advice from deans on who would be good representatives to the committee. And then there's a specific staff council representative. There are also several other staff representatives that are chosen by vice chancellors, vice chancellor for administrative services, and vice chancellor for university advancement in particular, send some additional staff representatives. And then there's some administration representatives that I choose from among the deans.
Okay. And then, so those are five faculty outside of David and...
No, it's five faculty total, including the two from the Faculty Senate on the Planning and Budget Committee. David and Cecile are on the Budget Options Group for now. They might also be the Faculty Senate representatives on my committee, but I've given them another week to decide who the Faculty Senate representatives are.
Okay. And then the Chancellor's Cabinet, this may or may not be yours to answer, but the Chancellor's Cabinet consists of people from all over the campus, including faculty?
The Chancellor's Cabinet consists of administrators.
Administrators, totally.
Yeah,
okay.
And it's... There's a core group which consists of the vice chancellors and the chancellor, and then there's a broader group that consists of some of that group plus some of the associate vice chancellors, basically. But the chancellor's cabinet doesn't include formal faculty representation.
So just a clarification. So the BOG or Budget Options Committee has two faculty, which are you two, on it, and then the Planning and Budget Committee has up to five faculty, which may include both of you or may include two other people excluding you, and then the Chancellor's Committee is administration. And the BOG answers to the Planning and Budget Committee, who then, or their suggestions are put forward to the Planning and Budget Committee and then put forward to the Chancellor. So in all, we're really talking about five, possibly seven faculty members involved in this process?
In terms of people who are formerly members of the committee, but keep in mind that there are many opportunities for faculty to have input into the process. The Budget Options Group has been widely soliciting suggestions for areas where there could be university cost savings and or increased revenue. And also, the Planning and Budget Committee will continue to be open to input. I haven't set up a website for that yet, but they're all set up an avenue where people can comment on the options essentially that have been presented to the Planning and Budget Committee. So,
okay, thank you.
This
That's
is a,
what
yeah.
I wanted to know.
Yeah. This is a representative process. People, and I tell them this with the Planning and Budget Committee at the beginning. You're not just representing, I mean, you're not just voting for yourself. You're representing a group. You
right.
need to consider input from the constituency that you represent.
Yep. Thank you.
And I saw a hand back here.
Actually, I raised my hand, but Cecile answered the question, so I'm
okay. And I thought I saw Jane.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Susan, you talk about the priorities for the faculty hiring. Does that include all tenure track as well as research and instructional terms?
I am reviewing all faculty vacancies as they come forward through there's the position request form that you may be familiar with that comes forward each time one of the deans or directors wants to refill a faculty position. However, soft-funded positions I'm approving for obvious reasons, ones that are, you know, for instance, research faculty that would be supported on research grants, I'm not delaying those. And virtually all term faculty positions I'm also approving. And the reason for that is that term faculty positions are just that. And if we got in very significant budget straits, unfortunately, those probably would be one, you know, one avenue for getting ourselves out of those budget straits. So most of my delays are focused in the tenure track position area.
Thank you.
Okay, and then I saw a question over here, or is that okay, Ken?
Susan, do you have the strategic Alaska future initiative? You said there was an updated document. Mm-hmm. Is that publicly available or not?
It's been supplied to the Faculty Alliance. Robert Buchman got the latest version yesterday, and he may or may not have forwarded it to you.
I haven't seen it yet.
Well, I'll tell you what. I can forward it to them because the Faculty Alliance is entitled to have it according to the statewide distribution, and then they can do what they want with it. There was no message in the email that I got that said that it had to be kept secret.
When we get it, we'll make it available. Any other questions?
Wow.
Okay, great. Again, we'll come back to the Chancellor's remarks when he's able to join us. We move now to governance reports, starting with Staff Council. Brad, you're online. Are you still online?
I am still here.
Do you have any report for us from Staff Council?
Sure. In brief, we met for the first of the year in January. We just had elections for roughly half our number, so we welcome a lot of new people on board. The core part of our meeting was spent on a presentation from the Office of Management and Budget regarding the FY15 budget, and we had some questions about the budget, about the budget options group, and that coalesced into a resolution requesting a seat on the budget options group since we are a governance group representing staff and there was no formal staff governance representation on the budget options group. And that's the bulk of my update.
Any questions for Brad? Thank you, Brad. And ASUAF, is Brix Hahn here representing ASUAF? Okay, I don't see. Danny from Athletics, Danny Shepard.
Thanks, David. Danny Shepard, I'm a faculty member in psychology, and I serve as the Chancellor-appointed faculty athletic rep position. So I serve as a liaison between academics and athletics, and just have a few updates for you. There used to be an advisory committee called the Intercollegiate Athletics Committee. It has bounced around under several different governance structures over the past 10 to 12 years and has been very ambiguous in terms of where it's housed and what its purpose is. So over the past year and a half, I've been working with the Chancellor and the Athletic Director to try and get a formidable and credible external advisory committee. We have finally put that together, so the Chancellor has created a new advisory committee. It's the NAAC, or the Nanook Athletics Advisory Committee. It will be housed under the Chancellor's office. All the positions on there will be Chancellor appointed with recommendations from the various constituencies that are represented. There will be two faculty, two staff, two community members, and two students on that committee. And then there actually will be a third faculty member as the faculty athletic rep, which I'm currently serving in, will be the chair of that committee. So there will be three faculty members on that committee. We just met for the first time last week, a very good group of people. We still have a couple of positions that are open that we're still looking for recommendations for, but we're moving along well with that. The athletics department is undergoing their required 5-year self-study. The NCAA requires that to be done. The athletics director has asked me to sit on that committee, so I'm very happy to be a part of the self-study process. The National Organization for the Faculty Athletic Representatives, they had their annual meeting in November. One of the big discussion items right now is the role of concussions and the research that's coming out on concussions and the physiological and neurological damage that's happening with it, and the need for reduced cognitive load or intellectual avoidance in the few days and certainly the week or two right after the concussion. So that's getting more and more national attention. We're looking to try and put a panel together to either perhaps present here at Faculty Senate or campus-wide in terms of helping people understand what that reduced cognitive load should be. But even attending classes is something that's very, very damaging to the brain. after a concussion. And in general, but I was talking with Don Foley about this, and this comes up quite a bit with students who are in car accidents, students who have gotten themselves slipping on the ice, et cetera. So definitely something that's become, as the research comes out, becoming more and more of an issue. The latest reports in terms of GPA, it's very, very exciting. They definitely increased GPA last semester as a department. The department GPA is up to a 3.23, and for the first time in school's history, every single one of the 10 sports teams were all over a 3.0 for the first time. So very, very exciting for that. I'm also in the process of putting together a faculty advisory committee for athletics. I could really use some input from additional faculty in terms of some of the things that I'm tasked with doing. Would love to have more faculty input on that. Certainly the two faculty that are on the advisory committee are going to help out, but would love to get more faculty. So if anybody here are interested, or any of the groups that you're representing, you know somebody that would be interested in helping out with that. There's a lot of things that we can do proactively on this campus to work with that could use some help on. Another big success recently, the hockey team just joined a new conference. That conference did not have a faculty voice at their regional meet or at their annual spring meeting where all the votes take place. They do have the chair of the FAR group, which is me this year, represented at that committee, but not all of the FARs were invited. So I've worked over the past couple of months to get that changed, and just recently the president just voted to have all of the faculty athletic reps at the table during those votes, so that there will be a very strong faculty voice when the conference is making their decisions on policy. So very, very excited that just happened this past week. So very happy about that. And then that's it. Thank you. Any questions for me?
I just have a quick one, Danny. In addition to trying to reduce learning after concussions, is there any effort to reducing concussions?
Yes. And I'm sorry, I failed to mention that. So with the research, they are working more with increasing efforts and attention to certainly the rules are changing. Again, this is the things that happened at the conference level and at the national level, that they are changing rules. There is much stronger enforcement of events that would cause concussions. There are eliminations of certain aspects of games and sports to help prevent that. So certainly at the rules level that's changing, the technology that's going into the padding and support for certain sports is also changing. We have very, very few on this campus. We have a very, very strong safety focus here, and so we maybe have one or two a year, but they've been minor. We've only had one major one in the past 5 years. So we're doing very well in terms of our conscientiousness on this campus. But yes, there are definitely efforts that are going along with that.
That's good. That's good. Thank you. Any other questions for Danny? All right.
Well, I just have a comment, and I have to say I'm extremely disturbed to even hear that, you know, oh, they shouldn't even, attend classes. What are these students here for? Are they here to play sports, or are they here to get an education? And so that's just absolutely disturbing to me that the priority is given on the sport and not the learning.
Well, the priority is not given on the sport as much as it is to any student that is find themselves in a situation where they have been concussed. And so it's I just happen to be involved with the athletic side of it, but in talking to Don Foley and finding out that this is dealt with, that there are many, many, many more students on this campus that are dealing with concussions than student-athletes. So the student-athletes actually have a lower concussion rate than our students.
No doubt. I'm the advisor of a student that was in a car accident and has severe problems because of it. So that's not the question here. But those students certainly don't choose to be in an accident and have a concussion. So I think what is disturbing to me is that either these students are not informed of the dangers of being being concussed and so on, and that we are essentially asked to pay the price here to say, ooh, you gotta make special excuses for these students because they cannot possibly attend class. So I find that a little bit ludicrous.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments or questions for Danny?
One quick question. Does this fall under ADA by any chance?
Does what?
The concuss, you know, if there is a concussion, are they protected by ADA?
That's there's the question about that right now, and I was going to go talk to our office to find out. When I talked to Don Foley a couple weeks ago about this, he said he wasn't sure either. So I don't know the answer to that. But
could you repeat the question?
It's my understanding that some schools do.
I asked that, is it covered under ADA? That is Disability Act, American Disability Act.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good to have that correctly in the minutes. Thank you. Okay. Any other questions or comments for Danny? Okay. Thank you, Danny. United Academics, Falk, do you have anything? Okay. And UAFT, Jane? Okay. Cecile informed me a moment ago that the discussion item is something that was not going to be on it, and it is now 1:57, which is just 3 minutes different from the break time, so I suggest we go on break, and we reconvene in, whoops, yes.
On the agenda, you have public comments.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I skipped right over that, but not intentionally. Let's do that. Thank you. I don't know why I didn't see that. Public comment. Thank you. Yes. Can you come to a microphone, please? Step up to a microphone. There are people who are online who can't hear you.
I just would like to ask raise questions about the safety trainings which we have to pass, and some of them have already passed it. So it takes a lot of time, a lot of professional times, and many of the safety trainings with models are not related to our professional duties, as far as I understand. For example, many of professors do not work with materials, and why should we know that and answer these questions, which sometimes are very strange. So, and it takes a lot of time. I just probably maybe consider to provide this trainings like recommendations for faculty and other people, not like exams which we have at now. And also in the International Arctic Research Center, we are not paid by UH, so it takes a lot of time.
I think pretty much everyone here would agree with you about that. I believe that this is this falls into the sort of the category, I think, of an incompletely resolved issue. At next month's faculty senate meeting, we've asked for a presentation from Office of Safety to us about safety and about how that is changing, how that hopefully is changing the requirements for safety training. So that's it. I hear you.
Thanks.
Okay.
Not only my opinion.
You're correct. You're right.
I don't know whether we feel to pay more in IARC because we don't have any found one that we can charge our time to. So we pretty much feel like, you know, we have to do this off of our own back. And I'm sure you all feel like it's a... If I actually felt like it was improving my safety, I'd be behind it. But given the nature of a lot of the questions, I think a lot of us are.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Other public comment. Libby, did you?
Yes, I do have two things.
Okay.
I wanted to let faculty members know that we dropped students for non-payment this weekend, so those who did not make payment arrangements in advance or did not make arrangements to get on a payment plan were dropped from their courses. This semester we will be emailing the faculty members that have students in their classes that were dropped so that you will know, so that you can remove them from Blackboard. also will be rolling out for the fall semester a new program called College Scheduler. Students can go to UA Online, and under the Registration tab, they can click on College Scheduler. It is a program that will allow students to put in work schedules, picking up kids from school, athletic schedules if they're on a sports team, and then they can say, I want a psych class, I want a science class, I want a math class. And College Scheduler will go out and find four schedules that fit into a plan for them, present it in a visual format, and then the students can pick which one is works best for them. So there will be a soft rollout with summer and in full force for fall.
Libby, can they also put in things like writing an oral intensive and that kind of thing?
Not yet, but I see a lot of potential to expand.
Great.
Can I make an announcement?
I saw Jane's hand first.
Yeah, can I ask Libby a question? Libby, so the course scheduler thing, will students still need an advisor signature?
Yes, this is just it's just a tool to help them, you know, instead of getting out the piece of paper that has the little grid, they can do it.
Okay, and then one more. The students that were dropped for non-payment, do they have an appeal process? I mean, can they come and beg to get in if they pay?
Those that were dropped this weekend were sent an email telling, this will be the fifth communication to them, by the way, all along up to the point that you're going to be dropped, and then now this last communication will say you have been dropped. They have until Friday at 5 o'clock to pay their fees.
Thank you.
This is the first time we've notified the faculty members that have those students in their classes.
Yeah, thanks for doing that.
Yeah, thanks. That's helpful. Any other questions for Libby? Okay. Did you have a question for
Libby? I apologize for I didn't see Jane's hand, but I wanted to just make a quick announcement. On 14th of February, and I'm going to send out an email to everybody. I'm trying to meet with faculty to have an open discussion on a few things that that are going to be instrumental in this strategic plan or any, you know, whatever we are going forward with. And the topics will be on whether we are moving towards a corporate structure as a university. That's one. The other one is how is online education viewed, and new studies have come up recently on impact of online education. And I don't know, e-learning and online education are, you know. So I'm going to invite all faculty, okay, UNAC faculty, unfortunately. If others are interested, I can send them an email, but I don't know who are non-UNAC faculty, except Jane.
If you send it to me.
I will send it to you, yes. So this will be an open forum where I'm going to make a short presentation that I learned from a recent AAUP, and this will be AAUP's position on this. I think the faculty senate members will be instrumental because these are curricular based. I'm just opening up the, I hope I'm not going to open up a can of worm, but it will be informational and people can participate. So hope to see you all.
Okay, thank you, Debu.
Thank you.
Okay, the chancellor has joined us, but he has said that he can make his remarks after the break. So thank you, Chancellor Rogers. And because this is a face-to-face meeting, you'll note that there are refreshments over against the wall. Those are for us, so you get to go have those. And let's come back in 10 minutes. Thank you. If you could start making your way back to your chairs, please, that would be great.
Okay, Friday week. Let's see how they're all running together.
Weren't you in my first class I ever taught, which was a high school emergency certificate? 2 months of school left.
That's good.
And sure enough, he was in that class.
Where were you, Ryan?
In high school.
Oh, you know.
Please grab your last cup of coffee, your last drink of water, your last cookie, if there's any left, and make your way to your seats, please.
Do you remember? Captain General.
Super.
Okay, thanks. Welcome back. Hope you enjoyed the cookies. Chancellor Brian Rogers has joined us, and we'll have his remarks at this point. Chancellor Rogers.
Thanks, Dave, and
apologize for being late today, but I was down working with the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce, who's going down to Juneau to lobby on their issues, one of which is our combined heat and power plant. And I never missed the opportunity to get allies from outside the university on that project. Just a couple of things. I know Susan touched on briefly the Shaping Alaska's Future, the system-wide planning effort is closing in on its statement of issues and effects. I want to thank each of you who participated in that process. I think where we are today is way ahead of where we were earlier in the process. I think we have a document that members of the Faculty Senate can feel good about, that it does set reasonable, achievable, but some stretch goals for the University of Alaska and each of the three universities within. And I expect that to be reviewed by the Board of Regents at the upcoming meeting here in Fairbanks. My guess is action would take place at the April meeting in Kodiak. But as part of that process, I think what we heard again and again was around the state in all of the public meetings, concern about how we serve our students system-wide and some of the challenges that particularly students who take courses from more than one university have. And so Susan mentioned that the president established a collaborative group of the president, the vice president academic, the three chancellors, the three provosts, which we've nicknamed the Summit Team, to look at areas of collaboration between the three universities. How can we do a better job of serving students? And there are several issues that we've identified that I expect will go forward. The Board of Regents has spoken to us a number of times about some of these. I think Susan and I have tried to be very careful to ensure that those areas that really need faculty involvement in the spirit of shared governance are not just sort of meeting the letter of the law, but really the spirit of what shared governance is all about. And there's one I want to highlight now that I think will need to involve a fairly in-depth discussion in this Senate and the two other Senates, and that has to do with academic calendar and class schedules. Where we're headed toward system-wide is a uniform academic calendar with start dates, stop dates, break dates being uniform across the three universities, and the same in the academic in the class schedule. Now that will entail some interesting issues between the faculty senates because we operate on a different number of class minutes than the University of Alaska Anchorage, and we operate on a five-day class schedule. Most of theirs is four, so some negotiation will be required among. That issue is the reason that I have not signed the motion from the Governance Coordinating Committee for the Academic 16 and Academic 17 calendars, and I think the expectation will be that that we'll ask the Senates to work on that issue and present one or more proposals to the president for what a combined calendar would look like. There are other items that the chancellors, provosts have discussed. I think Susan mentioned the alignment of math and English requirements, common financial aid. We have different interpretations of financial aid rules among the three universities, which really creates some challenges for both financial aid management and for students. So to the extent that we focus on making simplifying our administrative procedures for students, that takes one thorn out of the side and allows us to focus on the academic enterprise. I'll be headed to Juneau on Wednesday and Thursday for initial meetings with the legislature. I think you've all received the initial word on our budget. We haven't seen much change yet. The legislature has just started hearing the operating budget. I don't expect much change from the governor's request for the university on the operating side. I do expect some change on the capital side, both on the heat and power plants and potentially on several of our research projects, and I'll update you next month on that. This morning I signed a memorandum on the School of Natural Resources and Extension. That is the merger of the Cooperative Extension Service and the School of Natural Resources and Agricultural Sciences that Susan announced earlier this year. That proposal for naming and structure goes to the Board of Regents at the February meeting. The structure within the school, after spending time with both the provost proposal and the proposal that that came forward from the faculty, most of the faculty in the two units, I'm recommending to the president the faculty proposal with minor modifications that had substantial support from the faculty. And while I liked and respected the provost proposal and personally think that would have done better, I also have to respect the views of a substantial number of faculty and Cooperative Extension School Service and the School of Natural Resources and Agricultural Sciences. So it's no longer Sunrise, it's Sunri, School of Natural Resources and Extension, once the board acts later this month. Finally, we always take advantage of the in-person, the face-to-face meeting to host a reception for members of the Faculty Senate at the Chancellor's House. If you're not already planning to come, I'd invite you once again to join me and Sherry and other faculty members and the Vice Chancellors at the Chancellor's home this evening for a reception for the Faculty Senate. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions members of the Senate may have.
Just a quick one. What, for me, what time does that start?
Six.
Thank you. Reiner.
Brian, do you have any idea how we can find compromise with the OAA about the no classes on Friday?
Yes. The compromise is there will be classes on Friday. Yeah.
And as far as you know, they're resigned to doing that?
They will be?
I don't know that the faculty are resigned to doing that, but I believe that if the three senates are unable to agree and more than one proposal comes forward to the president and the Board of Regents, a proposal that utilizes facilities 5 days a week will win over a proposal that uses facilities 4 days a week. Now there are no guarantees in life, but I would wager way more than I would on a Super Bowl on that. I think the bigger issue is the 800 versus 750-minute minimum and the 60-minute versus 50-minute class period. I believe that UAF has the right schedule, and I think both Susan and I will do everything we can to support this faculty's position on that matter.
Other questions? Jane, and then Ken.
Brian, what about the common winter and spring breaks? I thought, like long ago, it was decided to have those at different times because of air travel.
That has been one of the main reasons that I, among others, have resisted unifying. But I think ultimately it comes down to students aren't getting a spring break. If they are taking courses at more than one university. And the more students that do that, the more that's become an issue. University of Alaska Southeast went to set their spring break for all of their campuses at the same time several years ago, so it doesn't necessarily align. Sometimes it aligns with us, sometimes with UAA. And essentially their decision, and I think the boards and the presidents, is to put students first. That will create some issues with air travel. I think that those can be accommodated, and we'll just have to buy our tickets early.
And the real issue is
what about the school district?
Because we're following down.
Well, I'm sure the rural faculty members here know with UAS does not necessarily align with each of the districts in our area. You know, that is going to be a challenge, and my hope is that since Anchorage and Fairbanks have tended to be offset by a week, that we might align with with one year and one the other year. But we will not end up aligning directly with the school district, and that's certainly an issue for faculty and staff and administrators. But for students, the failure to align has been a bigger issue than it has been for us.
And Ken, go ahead.
I would echo that for the students, because many students have kids, and that'd be an enormous problem. With respect to summer or the Maymester and Wintermester, do other campuses have that also, and how is that being incorporated into the calendar? Because in the past, that drove a lot of problems with respect to setting our calendar, getting the number of weeks needed, backing off from July 4th, going all the way back.
That's one of the issues that will need to be worked out, and Michelle and I have discussed what the impact may be. I think it's more likely to affect Wintermester as to whether we can even have the Wintermester in its current form unless we start during the break. There clearly are going to be some issues. And another one that is becoming more significant as our weather patterns are changing is whether we need make-up days for ice events in Anchorage and Fairbanks. So there are a number of issues that we're going to have to work through here.
Okay. Oh, look at was your comment taken care of?
No, not really.
Okay.
But I don't really know how to make a comment. I'm sure that this is something that everyone here has thought about, probably far more than I have. Maybe it's more of a comment that I really don't see in the end that the efforts at alignment necessarily are going to take care of all the issues for all of the students, and not necessarily better in the long term. And I think that there are sometimes advantages to having different systems within the same, or a different non-alignment within the same system. And I think that it would be nice if the Board of Regents maybe would be open to that a little more.
I'd like to interject here and say that at every Board of Regents meeting, and the February meeting is here, there is opportunity for public comment. Typically, like 9:30 or something like that. Have a look at the Board of Regents meeting schedule, and that would be the right time and place to bring up issues like that.
And there will be, you know, any changes that require regent action go through a proposal process that's shared with governance before it goes forward. For as long as I've been around the university Board of Regents, which now is approaching 30 years, there are regents who think we ought to be one university. I think part of what we've done in the summit team is to be clear that we don't favor a one university model. We are one university system, but three universities. And in fact, one of the language changes, moving away from in board policy from MAU to three universities, is an attempt to make that clear. But to the extent we are resistant to things that the board perceives make life easier for students, I think we exacerbate the tension towards one university. From my vantage point as chancellor, I think it's far better that we look to ease the burden of differences of the three on the students while preserving what's important to us in terms of the mission of this university and the separate missions of the three universities. To me, that's far more important than some of the administrative support issues that, like financial aid, that being unified would create.
Julie?
I understand and I agree with the idea that we should be making life as streamlined for students as possible, but I think this approach is eliminating one problem while creating another. As a couple of people already said, we have more and more non-traditional students every year with kids in the school district. And so if you're going to unalign with the school district just to align with UAA, you've created a whole new set of problems for those students. And I think that maybe someone needs to be very forceful in pointing that out to the Board of Regents, because the number of those students keeps going up while the number of traditional students, at least in my classroom, keeps going down. So why should we invent a perceived idea of what a student needs as opposed to what actual students really need?
So again, I don't know if you want to respond to that. Okay. And I great input, and you're welcome to feed some of that more to Cecile and me, because I do plan to show up to the Board of Regents meetings, but it'd be a lot more effective if more faculty did that, so it was not just me or.
Well, is it? I mean, what is the most effective procedure here? Send a bunch of students in? Is it?
I think, well, for example, Julie's comment, if somebody could say, here's how many students are currently taking courses across the three universities, and here's how many non-traditional students we have, and show the comparative sizes of those of the populations that we're serving, that might be useful for the Board of Regents to consider.
Libby, is that something you can come up with?
Writing it down. I can't myself, but I know who can.
Yeah, that's what I meant, yeah.
Is his initials I-O? Yeah. Yes.
Hi. Sorry, I think what Julie said also knocked something loose in my head, too. And I think this is probably something better taken up in front of Faculty Senate rather than in front of the Board of Regents, which is that it's all well and good to focus on making life easier for the students. But I think that we're missing part of the equation, too, which is that we also have faculty and staff, and we need to show that we support our faculty and staff. And if we unalign with the local school districts, who is going to help faculty and staff take care of their kids during spring break, for example? Are there going to be support systems in place for that? That's only one type of issue. But it seems to me that the university is not just about providing services to students. It's about academics. It's about higher learning. It's about all sorts of things, and it's not just one population. And I have the feeling in a lot of these discussions that we're forgetting that it's not a consumer model. It's not a corporate model. It's more than that. And if we focus on only one population, then not only are we alienating the rest, but we're making life a lot more difficult for the people who have to do the services for the students. And I don't mean that to say that I'm not interested in the students, just so that we're clear about that.
Okay, thank
you. Excuse me?
Sure, go ahead online and then.
Hi, I just wanted to make one comment, and we've just heard in the earlier part of this meeting that budget is getting tighter and that we need to increase revenue. So I do think we also need to keep in mind, while what the last comments were important for us to remember, I think that we do need to consider our students and make sure that we are capturing those who wish to come to us, helping them be satisfied so they continue to support our salaries.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah.
The question comes back to is, what's the best strategy?
Right. He's had his hand up for a long time. Go ahead.
Yeah, my question is there actually any evidence or data to support this position?
I'm sorry, which position
gonna,
is that?
It is going to increase student well-being and happiness and all that. Is there anything to prove that? Or is this just somebody's idea?
I'm really hoping you're not asking me.
Everybody.
Go ahead, Susan.
I would say that we have information on how many students are taking courses at more than one university. I can't speak to it right off the top of my head, but that information does exist, and we'll request it and make it available. There are also a number of situations where I'm aware that the non-alignment has caused issues. One of them was with the undergraduate fisheries program and the effort to enroll students on other campuses in the program established as a statewide program. So there are some challenges that have arisen because of the different schedules. I think that it would be very prudent to do some systematic research on this and identify how many people are being impacted and in what ways, so that we don't make changes that aren't really improving the situation for the vast majority. I would also, though, encourage some out-of-the-box thinking. One idea that the Chancellor had earlier that hasn't been taken up too much, but we could revisit it, is having a two-week spring break instead, perhaps shortening the winter break in compensation. The idea there was that everybody's school break would be accommodated potentially in that schedule. I guess at this nascent beginning stage, I'd encourage people to think constructively about how we might achieve a better situation and not necessarily rule out a particular solution. Maybe there's a way to go sideways and achieve the same end.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you. And just
it'd be great if somebody could come up with a recommended strategy for this upcoming Board of Regents meeting. I mean, yeah, individual faculty members could show up and gripe, and probably they'll be ignored. Should we listen to your advice and as to say, well, bend over and spread them because it's better than having one university and just live with it, or should we actually try to mount up some effort to push this thing back all together? I think that's the fundamental question.
Let me just, by way of addressing that, ask the Chancellor a question. At the last Regents meeting that I attended, a lot of staff came and presented their concerns about the potential for scaling back on the tuition credit, and they showed up. A large number of them showed up with a lot of information about their own personal experience with that, as well as what value they saw in that. And my impression was is that was something that the Board of Regents heard and took account of. And I'm wondering if that's consistent with your impression, Brian.
Yes, I think so. I think that many members of the board were sympathetic with the position even before those showed up, but I think that really demonstrated to the board the intensity of staff position on the issue.
But Reiner, I appreciate your input on that, and I'd be happy to. I don't have a strategy beyond suggesting that we try to get a lot of folks to show up who have some good input on how these kinds of changes would impact the university in ways that the Board of Regents is not yet considering. Debu?
Yeah, what happened to the faculty senator, or sorry, regent position? We were told that there was going to be a faculty regent position.
Oh, you were told wrong.
Okay.
So the Faculty Alliance has established a sort of a wish list of things that it wants to try to move forward this year, and developing a proposal to have a faculty regent is one of those items.
So it's still in the works.
It's still in the works, yes. Any other questions or comments for Brian? Ken?
For schools that have differential accreditation between the three MAUs, can you discuss how this unification has been presented as far as the effect it might have on the different accreditations and the pressure to take courses from other universities, et cetera, and what that could do to future accreditation efforts?
I don't think it would have any impact. Courses are either accredited or they're not, and if they're not, they're not going to count toward a degree at an accredited in an accredited program.
Okay, cause the reason why I ask is that I'm very familiar with efforts that have gone on at UAA and UAS where there was tremendous pressure to take courses from one and from UAS, use them at UAA, and the effect it had on the program where people would take courses at different so MAU to get around taking the hard course at their MAU, and then they couldn't pass the courses later. And it really makes me wonder, when you have students taking courses at different MAUs, is it to enhance their quality of their education, or is it for other purposes? Has anyone talked about that possibility?
I don't know that we have a sense of what the what the reasons are that students choose to take courses at a different university. I don't think we have data on that.
I noticed that the clock says that we're well behind of where we really want to be here. I appreciate all of your concerns and comments. They're great. The Senate leadership will be thinking about what you've suggested in your comments. If you have any other ones, please give those to us, and we'll be if we do come up with a we'll work on trying to come up with some sort of a strategy for the board. I don't know what it'll be at this point, but I'd like to see some sort of unified faculty statement of a position come out of this.
Then when is the meeting?
What's that?
When is?
It's I think February 18th, 19th, 20th, somewhere right in there, I believe. 2021. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just don't have it on in front of me.
Yeah, it'd be great if we could come up with something that we
right. Okay.
Soon, so that people can get it on their radar to attend.
So thank you for all your comments so far. Please feed us more. Let's move now to new business. There's a couple of items. Versus to, we currently have a policy in place for graduation walkthrough for people who are very near to being completed by their requirements for their graduate degree. The GAC Graduate Advisory Committee has submitted a motion to revise that policy. John Yeary is here representing Donny Brethart, the chair of the committee. So, John, you want to tell us about it a little bit?
I'll be very simple with this. We're not really revising the policy. We're clarifying the policy to try and make it much more straightforward. So the students still have the potential to walk through graduation ceremonies in the fall, even though they're not really going to graduate until the summer, August, sometime like that. And so we've basically put together, we actually included a list of all the people that had to sign that the walkthrough permission for that student. So basically, his whole committee, the dean of the department head, and the dean of the school, and they don't receive their degree that day. They just end up walking through. So their official degree would still not come out until they finish up the last little bit they might need to do on their thesis. You know, it could be something like they've done their defense a week before graduation, and they've still got 2 pages to fix on their thesis or something like that, that something like that can get done. But being approved by their whole committee, the department head, and the dean, that's supposed to guarantee that student is going to finish by August 1st. If he doesn't finish by August 1st, he still doesn't get his degree. So we're just trying to clarify what all has to be done to allow that student to walk through graduation ceremonies in the spring.
Okay. I will consider this a motion on the table that's been made by John as representing. Is there a second?
I second.
Okay. Thank you. And let's go to discussion. Any discussion on this?
Thank you. I've seen the same. I had the same experience. What you just described. My question though is, what are the impacts of being strict or not strict, and what does it really mean when people walk and then they get to graduate a little bit later? Like, is it a real problem for us? Like, what's the real pro and con? I'd like to see the full story, and in the moment, I don't see that really.
Well, some students would like to actually walk through graduation so their parents and friends and family could be there to actually see that. They're not going to get the same go-around if they actually graduate in the summer. So most of it is just to give them the opportunity to do something like that. They're not going to actually receive a degree at that point. They'll just walk through and be recognized at that point, too.
And again, this is largely a clarification and to make it more clear what students have to do. And also, everybody should have gotten a copy of the commencement walkthrough form, which your committee also has
right.
along with us, to make
yeah.
it clear to the students what has to be done. Any other discussion on this? Okay. Let's go ahead and vote. I don't see any, nobody contributed any negative, so I'm going to say, does anyone object to this? And without objection, the motion carries. Second item of new business is a motion to approve a new minor in leadership submitted by the Curricular Affairs Committee. Reiner, can you speak to this, please?
Honestly, it's harmless. It might even do some good. I urge you to support it.
I will consider that a motion. Is there a is there a second? Thank you.
Are these new courses?
No, they're not new courses. They're existing courses. No cost. Find out. Not much cost.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Any other discussion about this?
Yes. These recreational courses, are they required or are they optional? All the RECR courses.
Okay.
Recreation, beginning rock climbing, advanced rock climbing, I mean, or kayaking, wilderness, emergency care.
There is an outdoor leadership track.
Oh, it's enough.
You have to take the outdoor leadership track.
Oh.
Right, there are several tracks. Any other questions, comments, discussion? Objections? Okay. Are there any objections to this motion? Seeing none, the motion carries, and we move now to something else. We move now to our guest speaker who will be talking to us. Eric, are you here?
Yes, I'm right here.
Thank you. There is a new strategic master planning effort underway, and I've asked Eric Williams to speak to us for about 5 minutes. Great.
Hello, everyone. I'm Eric Williams from the Office of Sustainability, and I'm going to be covering the SMP and the faculty proposal. UAF is developing a sustainability master plan, so that's the SMP, and it's going to outline the detailed plan for where UAF is going in sustainability, its strategies, action steps, and it's going to measure progress for certain topic areas. These topic areas are going to include energy, waste, recycling, transportation, education, curriculum, dining services, and more. And it's not just limited to that. There's lots of other ones. The SMP is going to help us build on the progress that we've already made and help UAF become a top sustainability performer. We're looking for dedicated individuals to help us out with this. So all of you here seem likely candidates. And they'll help with the process and provide input. In addition to the SMP, we have a faculty proposal right now, and that is to increase sustainability in the curriculum. So if you have a great idea for sustainability in one of your classes, then you can apply for this proposal and we'll give you money to go through with it. Thank you so much.
Any
questions?
And just to clarify, there's an actual sustainability master planning committee that you were. I'm not sure. Is the correct? Are you leading it or?
I am liaison between Brenda Group, which is a consulting group, and UAS.
And so presumably this will also be producing a sustainability master plan at the end of its work.
Okay. Yes.
And we are, I have asked David Fitzino to serve as the liaison between the Faculty Senate. He's not a senator, but he's a faculty member and he serves on the RISE board. I've asked him to serve as a representative, faculty representative on the Sustainability Master Planning Committee. I'm hoping he says yes. But if anybody here has an interest in that, I would love to hear from you. Any other questions for Eric?
What is sustainability?
Sustainability, in terms of UAF, is the ability to carry forward. So how UAF will continue to succeed in the future.
Okay. All right. I was really with the definition of sustainability, I was worried that was going to take 20 minutes, so thank you. Okay. 20 years.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We move now to – thank you very much, Eric. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We move now to members' comments, questions, and announcements. I know that Mike, you had something that you wanted to share with the Senate.
Thanks. Just a couple things, just for clarification. I did just get back from Juneau and had a leadership class down there and met with 31 members of the legislature, including members of finance and, you know, the whole leadership. And I'd have to say the situation, and I apologize, I had called away, but situation is very serious down there. And one of the things that I supplied you was one of the briefings that David Teal has talked to the Finance Committee is this chart that you have right here, which basically projects ahead into the future, and you'll see that by 2024, only three programs, which doesn't include the university, will take all of the budget. This sort of set shockwaves through the Capitol when he presented that. The other thing that I presented to you, or you have in front of you, and I think I shared this last year, but this is a history of our revenue coming, total revenue that we've had. And this shows you what the revenue will look like in the future without the passage of this oil tax bill. The other thing that the students had were presented with was projecting out into the future. I apologize, maybe the Chancellor talked about this a little bit, but they're projecting $2 billion shortfalls for the next 5 to 10 years. So we may, and I guess the Senate is looking at a $15 million cut. According to our chief lobbyist, the House is looking at more significant cuts. And this is just the beginning. So I think students, myself, we came away very sober about what the future looks like. And the other thing that was, and I don't know if you heard this last week, but the Commissioner of Revenue this year said throughput will drop in the future, not increase, will drop, so that these revenue projections of $2 billion shortfall for the next 5 to 10 years is what they're looking at. So we may have looking at a shortfall this year, but that shortfall will continue. So we're looking at more cuts in the future. Now, I apologize, Brian, you may have said some of this, but as some of you know, I used to be in the legislature. I used to serve on finance, and I came away very sober about what's happening down there.
Thank you very much, Mike. Sure appreciate it. Any questions for Mike?
David, this is Tori.
Go ahead, Tori.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't think those of us on the audio got these handouts. If someone could.
Yeah, I apologize. And I will be happy to supply those, or maybe Jane can help me supply those two handouts to you. And I hate when people do that, and I apologize that I just did that for you. So I apologize for that.
No problem.
Mike, if you have PDFs of those, you can just supply those to us, and we'll post them on the Faculty Senate webpage. Okay, Ken.
Mike, did you discuss how
referendum on SB 21 is likely to affect it, depending upon what way it goes and short-term and long-term consequences?
Well, right now, according to David Teal, who's the director, it doesn't make a difference right now. It doesn't make a difference, but the reason why we have approximately $17 billion surplus right now is because of the progressivity of the tax, this right here that you see. That will go away. So, but basically, if the oil prices go up, I mean, it's a pretty complex document, obviously, but if the oil taxes go up, we won't see a spike like this. We're going to continue to see a decline into the future. The Department of Revenue, when asked, they asked, will throughput increase? He said no. The Department of Revenue does not see more throughput as a result of this tax. He said that on the record. So, did I answer your question? Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
That's one of the things that I'm concerned about. I think that it's good that we have people working on this budget committee, but I think the situation is much broader, and it's going to be into the future we're going to have significant challenges to be able to run the programs we have right now.
Well, this is very sobering.
Was right, for me.
Thank you.
Was for me.
Okay. Any other members' comments before we move along to any general comments or announcements? And then we have minutes of the various committees are attached. Do any of the chairs wish to amplify or modify or retract anything that they have in the minutes that are in the agenda? Don't be shy. Okay. Wow.
Bragging rights.
Okay. Well, it is 3:00, and so we sit adjourned. Thank you very much.
Whatever that word.
I know.
Sober.
Sober.
Sober. Sober.